Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Today, a special look at education in America, a focus specifically on the urban school. At a time when vouchers and charter schools are supposed to improve choice and quality, we look at the kids who still fill the hallways of those often dangerous, aging, and understaffed city schools. We'll hear from the students, a teacher, a community worker. We'll talk to a specialist in urban education. And, of course, we'll hear from you, Connection listeners. We start today with students I met in school in Boston. Dorchester High is perhaps the toughest school in Boston. It can be an intimidating place on any morning. The windows are covered in thick metal grills. Metal detectors meet you at the front door. City police walk the hallways in pairs. On this day at Dorchester, the kids are, as one said to me, a bit sketched out. A man was recently found murdered on the school bleachers. Shortly after, a student was beaten to death when he tried to break up a fight. Students bang their books in and out of bent red metal lockers. One girl is crying. A boy is trying to comfort her. In room 104, Sandy Simpson is trying to get the attention of her 10th grade students.
All right.
Just as a handful of her students begin to pay attention, someone, somewhere, yanks the fire alarm and everyone heads outside. Some of them don't bother coming back. Some do. One of them is Tawana Mack, but she's not happy about it.
To me, it's just a building, really, with kids in there and a teacher. It doesn't really catch me. That's why I don't really like coming to school. I look at school as just another danger field or something.
She says kids are supposed to think of their school as a community. But there are no after-school activities. It's like the school just wants the kids to go away.
People look at kids as though that they're troublemakers and that they're not going to make it in life, that they're messing up our world. So everyone looks at us and we get mad, so things just happen. We end up killing families. We just don't trust our families. We don't trust the people around us. We get into gangs. So without after school programs and stuff like that, that can hold us in long enough and help us on our work so we can be better people, We're just going to be disasters. That's what I think.
Tacky Stewart is in Tawana's class. On the day when there's so much attention on the violence that's around the school, she doesn't have much enthusiasm for Dorchester High.
I mean, it sounds so, you know, gloomy, but I don't want to be here. The things that's happening around here just scares me. I don't even want to come to school. And it's just crazy. It's ludicrous. And I don't know. I don't know how people can come here and be happy, because it's not a happy thing. You hear about the story that the kid we found dead on the bleachers and everything like that, with his brains on the and blood. It's like, it's so horrific that everybody has to walk through the field, and we have to see that. We had to come up in the morning. We're just waking up, and we're seeing dead bodies here and there. And then a kid that is in my one of my friends' math class, he got beat to death over some madness that, you know, he was just trying to, you know, talk the problem out, but they just take, you know, madness in their own hands and just beat him to death, and now he's dead, he's gone, and we got to live with that, and it's so bad. Nobody should be able to come to school and be scared, you know? They're supposed to be safe here, but it's not at all, and it hurts me to come here every day.
When the man who's now president of the United States was running, when he was campaigning, George W. Bush said, leave no child behind. He was going to fix the education system or see to it that it was fixed. If you had a chance to sit down with the president and say, okay, Mr. Bush, here's what you have to fix, what would you tell him to do?
I'll say renovate all our schools and just have fences or something, barbed wire. I mean, if that's the case, you have to go to those limits, just do that. Put locks on the windows, bolt the doors, do something, because keep the danger out of the schools, because that's my main concern. I just don't want to come here. You know what I mean?
Jack, you hear what you're saying? Barbed wire on the fences, locks on the windows and the doors. You're talking about creating some kind of prison where you could go to school.
I understand that, but it's like, I'd rather be safe than sorry, because I don't know if you heard, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but you know, they shot at the schools and we found a dead body over there. There's no way we can put an end to that. Just like world hunger, there's no way we can put an end because we just can't. So it's never going to stop. The violence is never going to stop. You know, so I guess just leave it as is. Forget it. I wouldn't even waste my time talking to the president. If I had the opportunity, I wouldn't. I'll just leave it alone. Just whatever. Live with it. Deal with it. I've been doing it for so long, so that's what I'm going to do.
It was a bad day at Dorchester, but it's a school that has lots of bad days. Connection listeners, we're talking about the state of urban education. What is missing? There are charter schools and parochial schools and in a few places voucher programs to help pay for a way out. But most kids and parents will stay and try to squeeze what they can out of those underfunded and overwhelmed public schools. So we're asking what needs to be done to improve education for American students like Tawana and Taki, kids who won't or don't leave their neighborhood schools until they graduate, they age out, or they drop out. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. With me in the studio, Pedro Noguera. He's a professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. He's also a former teacher and a former school board member. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
And also with us, the teacher whose voice you heard in that tape from Dorchester High, Sandy Simpson, is starting her seventh year as a social studies teacher at Dorchester. Welcome to the program, Sandy.
Thanks for having me.
I'm listening to you in the classroom going, all right, all right. And I'm thinking, it's so hard for you to be heard with the not just the physical noise of the school, but all the other things that seem to preoccupy the kids.
There are lots of interruptions in our day at Dorchester, but we get a lot done. While it seems like it's a very hectic place, so is the city that we live in, and we've all developed coping mechanisms to get through it. The fire alarm problem seems to be increasing. Some days we have two or three of them a day, and that can really interrupt your classroom. So can attendance rates. You usually have four or five kids out a day, and it's a different four or five kids every day. Continuity is different and difficult.
But I remember a moment in the classroom. Kids are giving each other a haircut at the back of the class. The door is open, the conversation in the hallway spilling into the class. And yet, in the middle of all that, there's you and five or six students kind of crouched around a table. And you're teaching and they're listening. And I wonder if that isn't really one of those teaching moments, learning moments that you have to work in.
You always have to catch them. They're flying by. And teachable moments happen. There are teachable days. You want to make your classroom a place where it's the kids' classroom. You want to make sure they're comfortable and that they can trust you. I'm there every single day, and they know it. We need to make sure that at some point we can get our work done, but we can't ignore what's happening in the world around us.
Pedro, you have spent a lot of time in classrooms yourself. We're in Providence, in Oakland, in Berkeley. So you're listening to the sound of Dorchester High and thinking what?
Well, what I hear when I hear those students speak is the sound of hopelessness, of kids who don't believe that anyone's listening, that anyone who has power cares about what's happening to them. And I think that, above all, is the biggest tragedy that we're witnessing in our urban schools.
You're putting together a book now. It's called Confronting the Urban, How City Schools Can Respond to Social Inequality. And in part of it, you're talking about specifically what Sandy's discussing, and that is that you need to see the school in the context of the street and the neighborhood and all that part of what the kids' worlds is, and that we don't do that enough. We tend to focus just on the institution.
That's right. And because one of the things you hear from these students is that so much of the problem in the school starts outside of the school. And so what we need is a way in which the schools can both provide stability, safety for children, but also engage the community in ways that enable the school to draw on its resources for support.
Let me hear from both of you about what it is, though, that's discussed at the policy level, this whole idea that the solution lies in escape routes from the schools, in vouchers that allow the student to go to a different school, in charter schools, target schools, parochial schools. I mean, is this something that the students you teach, Sandy, see as the only solution?
the students I teach don't see it as a solution at all. They're at Dorchester High. They're there for many reasons. Dorchester High is the least selected school in the city. We have a choice system. But still, I have 1,000 kids at the school. Taki and Tawana come every single day. So while the school might not be providing everything it can or should, it does provide a certain stability. And even though there's a feeling I'm scared at work, and I have good reason to be scared at work, I'm safer at work than I am hanging out in the blocks around my school. While charter schools are incredibly important, and looking for ways to reform education is very important, urban district high schools are not going away. We need to continue putting our effort there. While it's important to give parents and students choice, you can't. My kids are not disposable. They're not throwaway kids. We need to make sure they know how to work the system.
Pedro.
Yeah, I would say that the problem of high schools like Dorchester High really stand out because we know how to provide a better education for kids. Right in Boston, there are examples of high schools that serve similar populations of kids that are doing a better job. The problem is that we have not given a school like Dorchester the support it needs to provide those kids with the resources that they'll need to be more successful.
Is it just money that you're talking about?
It's not just money. One of the things the students said, they said her school has no extracurricular activities. Right.
I pushed her on that. I said none, and she said, "Oh well, okay. There's the baseball team, and there's a basketball team, and there's a football team, and somebody once said there was volleyball, but I don't know where it is and when it is." So
right. Well, okay. I don't know enough about the high school to know exactly what they have.
Aren't any? It's just that they're not really up there and pushed, and the kids aren't really encouraged to participate. Right. Sandy, is that accurate?
I disagree. I mean, there aren't as many options at Dorchester High as there might be at Latin or some of the other schools, but there are opportunities for kids to get involved. There's teen empowerment, there's Future Educators of America, there's a variety of clubs each year that are started by our interns, and we have a partnership with UMass. So there are a lot of resources in the school. It's the continuity of year to year, the same things. And it's the sports that last, it's the other stuff that falls away.
Right. I don't think that actually changes the point you were going to
right.
make.
Right. Well, my point is that kids who believe they're headed somewhere, kids who have clear goals about their future, and kids who have a sense that they can attain those goals will behave a lot differently than kids who think they're heading nowhere, than kids who are not sure they're going to live to be 21 years old. And the way you shape those aspirations is by engaging those kids more thoroughly in school, by talking to them about their hopes, their dreams, and what it would take to fulfill them.
By providing more support to the Sandy Simpsons with social workers in the school? Is that what
you're talking about? Social workers, counselors, lots more support, because the school can't do it all by itself.
The problem is that I work at an academy at Dorchester High called the Academy of Public Service. Been there 12 years. We have a graduation rate of 98%, and we have over 90% of our kids going on to 2- and 4-year schools. The problem is that those kids walk in saying, "I'm going to get through this." The problem that we're seeing now is some of those best kids are getting weighed down by the violence that they see in their community. So while they came in with vision, that vision is being stripped away from them. They're innocent bystanders in a war that's going on, and nobody's paying attention to it. It's not all sources in the school.
Connection listeners, we're going to talk about that violence. We're going to talk about how the kids maintain their goals at schools like Dorchester and right around the country when we come back after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. This is Dorchester High. Back in the rush and the push of students, it's enough to make anyone wonder how anyone who goes here manages to learn anything. Manny St. Macari is a jock. He plays baseball, basketball, and football, and he's good at all three sports. He might very well go to college on an athletic scholarship. Or he might have to make it on the strength of his grades.
Me and my friend Kevin, you know, we made up colleges we would like to go to on a little list. So we have something set, you know. Ever since I was younger, I always wanted to go to college. I never knew a moment when I didn't want to go to college.
Manny's sister is already in college. She tells him to stick to it. His parents are also behind him.
I have support from everybody, so it's never really like oh, I can't do this or that, because there's always people around me, even my friends like that I live around, always telling me, oh, you can do this. Even people I don't know, I just have interact with them. They're like, oh, you could be somebody. So I just let all that go. I don't let it go to my head, but I just keep it in mind that, oh, all these people think I can be somebody. I don't want to let them down. But there is times like, oh, man, do I really want to do this? Do I have to do this? But it's like, if you want to succeed, you know, you have to do it. So I just do what I have to do, handle my business, you know, so I can succeed in life later on, because the things I do now are going to help me later on in life.
Most of the students I talk to, whether they like being at Dorchester or not, say from the moment they were assigned to this school, they dreaded what they were in for.
I didn't come here on purpose. Like, it wasn't one of my choices. But when I told my brother I was coming here, he said this is one of the baddest schools in Dorchester.
Diana Vicente is another student at Dorchester. She picks up a theme of Manny's that gets my attention. She likes this school. She works hard here because she's been motivated, inspired by one person.
Like my godfather's mother-in-law, she said one thing she said to me is, education is the one thing that nobody can take away from you. They could take away your family, your possessions, your sanity, your life, but they can't take away your education because it's all in there. So she tells me, just keep on going with the education.
Diana's uncle's mother-in-law is Isora Mendez. Diana was keen to point out that Isora, though she's in her 50s, is also taking courses to help her read and write.
She has a hard trouble with it, but she gets through it, you know, and I see that she has so much pride in, you know, wanting to do education, wanting to learn. I'm younger than her, and I have more, you know, knowledge. Like, dang, when I get that age, I'm going to have so much education, and that's real important.
This hour we're talking about urban education, what happens to the students in so-called failing city schools after some leave via voucher programs, charter school options. What happens to the students left behind? Sandy Simpson is here. She's a teacher at Dorchester High. Pedro Noguera is with us. He's a specialist in studying city schools. He's writing a book called Confronting the Urban. And joining us in the studio is the woman we just heard about in that last piece of tape. She is the mother-in-law of Diana Vicente's uncle, Isora Mendez. Thank you so much for coming in. Diana said about you that you told her education is the one thing no one can take away from you. Why is education, in your mind, Isora, so important?
I think from the when you start school 4 years, from four till, I know you have to go to school 12 years before you graduate from high school, and it's a lot of thing out there that you go and do, and then later on in life when you, it like kind of snatch out of your hand. But I feel the education that when you have it, it's something that you get to hold for the rest of your life. And nobody can, like I say to her, nobody can take it away from you. And it's good because nobody can, you, people can fool you, and you, and people respect you.
I should point out that you have a little badge, a picture of your son, Bobby Mendez, pinned to your jacket. He was 22 years old when he was killed in 1995 in your neighborhood. That your two sisters both lost sons to violence on the streets. That since that time you've become very well known in your community as an activist, someone who speaks out on behalf of the survivors, that this is something that you work at now. Is school the answer to getting the kids away from that violence?
Yes. I see the kids all my life. I live on my area for 23 years. I see them born innocent and then grow up. And they like to go to school when they little and they continue school. But when they get reached to 13, 14 year old, somehow it's some things get to them that they don't want to go to school anymore. They feel like they're not learning in school. And then they continue to hang on the street, and then they leave school and stay on the street. But kids nowadays have a lot of pressure. It's a lot of murder in our community, drugs, and they have to deal with all of that. And some of them end up to drugs, some of them don't end up to drugs, and some of them, the parents work, like, put up so many hours at work, they don't have no one to turn to. And,
you know, if Diana Vicente makes it, she'll be the first kid in her family ever to go to university, ever to go to college. And she holds that, as well as her inspiration from Isora, as something in front of her, as a goal. Should we be looking more to the community, to support from mentors like Isora, rather than to the schools, to the institutions, to resolve the problems that we're talking about here, the neighborhoods that make it so hard for those kids to concentrate?
Well, I think the community can play a role, and people like Isora play a major role in supporting kids. But the community needs help. The problems that Isora is describing, the lack of jobs, the drugs, the crime, that community can't solve those problems by itself. That's where the city has to play a role. That's where the business leaders have to play a role. The economy in a place like Dorchester does not provide jobs for the people who are there. If you look at a place like Dudley, the Dudley neighborhood here in Boston, it's been revived. It is a much more stable, a safer, a better community today than it was 20 years ago. We should be making those kinds of efforts in other poor communities, not just in Boston, but throughout the country, because the quality of life in the neighborhood has a direct bearing on the quality of education children provide in school. And we can't continue to pretend that schools can solve these problems by themselves. We have lots of kids coming to school every day who are hungry, who haven't seen a doctor, need to see a doctor, who have lots of unmet needs that teachers can't meet on their own. And so when I hear the president say, or the secretary say, they want to leave no child behind, I say, well, where's the plan to expand health care? Where's the plan to address their housing needs? And until we see that, we know that this is just rhetoric.
At our school, we see a 40% change of our student body from September to June. And these kids are moving from district to district following their parents for work. 10% of our parents come to parent open houses. Sometimes when they see me every day, I'm the stable adult in their lives for a variety of reasons. The consistency and the stability that many children have in this country, kids in the city don't always have. And that's nothing that the school can change. But yet the results of that are in our classroom. The baggage that kids bring to our classroom are what we have to wade through in order to remind them of their potential.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. To Boston, Eric's on the line. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, Dick. Thank you for taking my call. And first of all, Sandy, wonderful job, and my congratulations for the courage to stick it out.
Thank you.
I have a comment and a question. Professionally, I'm the science director of the Urban Ecology Institute here at Boston College. And our part of our mission is to reach out to schools and provide science education, field-based science education for students in this urban context. And, you know, we've been talking about these escape channels. And, you know, I think both in subtle and not so subtle ways, and certainly as I'm an ecologist by training, you know, we have reinforced the idea that cities are, we measure success of folks in cities by how effectively they can escape the city. And, you know, that's really tragic. I mean, if we think about, you know, sustainability issues, whether we're talking about education or environmental issues, we're talking about creating sustainable cities as a real measure of success. And that starts in our schools. You know, our program is oriented around providing local opportunities for students, selecting field sites at their schools, working with their teachers, and creating very much community-based education.
Eric, let me just interrupt for half a sec. Eric's saying that it starts at the schools, Pedro.
It starts at the schools. And part of the dilemma that we face is that, you know, we take students on field trips, we give them opportunities, and show them places that are not their local context. And the local context, these urban centers are teeming with life and community, and this is where these students are growing up. And unless we can empower them and create cooperative education environments...
Let me hear from the people in the studio here. Eric?
I agree strongly with the first point he made, which is that the message that we give to some kids is that if they are lucky, they'll be allowed to escape. Right? That is, they'll be allowed to escape those neighborhoods instead of trying to provide them an education that could enable them to make a difference in improving their community.
Exactly.
That we need schools that are able to help kids and their families see how they can improve the quality of life in their community, so that the school really becomes an asset to that community. And that's what the caller was describing. I agree with that completely.
It's very important for students to know that they can be agents of change in their community. And it's important for them to know the thousands of ways that they can participate in democracy. And the idea of saying there's a better world out there, no, the idea is that we make our world better. The idea... Of telling kids, you know, you should leave Boston to go to college. Most of my kids want to stay in Boston to go to college. They like it here, and they want to make it better.
Isora, were you going to say something?
Well, I have a few. A mother wants to move from Dorchester and to take their kids away.
Because she wants to go to a different school?
Because they wanted to go to a different school and raise their kids different, better than Dorchester. So, and also I have a few kids live in a community, and they know I'm there, and I like to encourage kids to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? I told them that from 8 till 12 years old, you know, that's how the kids are. And I told them, when you finish your report card, and I will take you to the Burger King and different place. So now when they get the report card, they come to me to show me so I can take them out. I think, Fry, like you were saying, that, you know, that will help the kids to succeed.
I would just say that the desire to leave a failing school or a troubled community is completely understandable. My parents moved out of Brownsville section of Brooklyn when I was 6 years old because it was a terrible place to grow up. However, and this has now become our national policy, right? This idea that we will let kids escape failing schools.
More than that, we'll close the failing schools.
As if there were a room in the better schools or a desire in those better schools to serve these children. I think we have to face up to the bigger challenge. The bigger challenge is, how do we make sure that kids in Dorchester get provided an education in their community that serves their needs and does not rely on us moving them elsewhere, shipping them to some other town to provide them with that education. And I think we should be able to do that here.
Briefly.
Getting back to the caller and his science-based work, last year we did a program with our kids where they tested lead contamination in the neighborhood, and then we took those soil samples to the EPA. We had them tested, and then we presented back to the West of Washington Community Organization, and the kids made a website. This is the type of stuff that makes my classroom come alive and make my kids more committed to working in their
actually
neighborhood.
Connecting the school to right. the neighborhood. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Eric, thanks for your call to Charleston, South Carolina. Now Tim's on the line. Tim.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just let you know I've been here 5 years in Charleston, South Carolina, but grew up and have lived 50 years in the Boston area. Went to school there in the late 50s and early 60s, and I have seen sort of a decade change over the last 50 years of some of the problems we're now faced with, not just there in Boston, but around the country. But I do see the problem as I've listened to the various voices there. The schools have, in fact, opened their doors to the streets. And the only alternative to that is what that child said about putting barbed wire and chains around to keep it out. And I think in some way in the inner cities, in particular Boston, there is that sense that the streets somehow over the years got into the school system and the schools were not able to keep it out.
Are you saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, Tim?
Oh, I'm saying that that's a bad thing, to keep the streets out of the schools. When I went to school, the school was able to keep it out. There was nothing done in the school during that 5 to 6 hours each day that reflected what was going on out in the street.
So more a failure of the administration rather than the teachers in the classrooms.
Well, I think there's been sort of an open door into the area that has caused the problems, and there hasn't been that rigid sentry that keeps the streets out of the school system. But I do agree, this is an immense problem. I think it's many different facets of our social life that are influencing the issues, and it's not going to be solved with Washington. It's probably going to have more of an impact if it's done by the local school areas around the school.
If the local school areas, Pedro, have the financial wherewithal to do that, because that's part of the what happens with the flight to the suburbs, is that the businesses aren't there, the tax base isn't there, that the support isn't there, and leads to the whole idea of, just close it.
Well, let me give you a different scenario. I was at David Douglas High School in Portland, Oregon, 2 weeks ago. David Douglas High School serves a low-income population. It serves as a community center. Rather than becoming a fortress, a prison-like facility, the way the caller described, it is a center that serves not only the needs of its kids, but the needs of that entire community. And because it does, that community protects the school and sees it, values it as a resource. If we turn our city schools into prisons, first of all, we need to realize prisons are not safe places, right? And second of all, we need to, what kind of conditions that to work under as a teacher or to learn under as a student? I don't see any evidence at all to suggest that direction is going to solve this problem. I think there are other, more enlightened ways to take that, and there are models of it that are working elsewhere in the country.
Connection listeners, if you have to lock the community out at the front door of the public school, is that a sign that you've got a problem in the community, in the school, or both? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about education. Today we're talking about urban schools and the problems of the kids who don't have the options or don't choose to take advantage of the options that are presented to them as a way of getting out of the school. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Part of the story in understanding urban schools is that people give up. Stereotypes become reality. Schools and neighborhoods are written off as academic wastelands. One student at Dorchester, Marquise Tucker, says nothing that ever works at school gets the attention that it deserves.
I think one of the problems is, like we were talking about in the class, that a lot of positive things go on here. Like we put on like a lot of different positive events, and it's like, no one sees that or whatever, like no press wants to really come and cover it. But like a couple of weeks ago where this dead body was found in front of the school, there were press all over, and I didn't go to school that day. I had woke up late and I just stayed home and I was watching the news, and I seen that like there's a dead body in front of Dorchester. And it turns out the person didn't even go to the school, but then everybody's saying that like, oh, he was from Dorchester High and then all this other stuff. So if there's like any way that I can like show like what really happens at the school, which I don't know how, but I would definitely do that. So working on towards a reputation.
What would it take to turn it around?
I think the attitude of the students who come here, like some of them, once they hear that they're going to Dorchester, it's like, oh, my life is over, things like that. Like they feel like this really like depressed and everything when they first get here. They're like, a lot of students like it, but I think it's, if you come here with the attitude that everything's going to be bad, then things are going to be bad. Like, you only get from it what you put into it.
Marquise Tucker describing one way of surviving at Dorchester High. With me on the program this hour, Sandy Simpson, Marquise teacher, social studies at Dorchester High, Isora Mendez, community leader with the Cape Verdean community in Dorchester, and Pedro Noguera. He's a professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, author of the forthcoming book, Confronting the Urban, How City Schools Can Respond to Social Inequality. And Sandy, you can hear in Marquise's voice the frustration talking to a reporter about, you know, the last time all the reporters were here is when there was all the bad stuff here. Has he got a point to make about the good stuff gets no attention?
He's got a great point. You know, last year, these kids, our last project was on world hunger, and these kids, who 90% of them qualify for free lunch, did a food drive and collected over 200 pounds of food for the Boston Food Co-op. Did anybody cover it? The Boston Herald gave us a blurb on the website, but that was only because the food bank kept pushing it. You know, that kind of stuff doesn't get celebrated. The fact that...
And that matters to the kids.
It matters hugely to the kids. You know, our kids participate in the community. Our kids come to school. Our kids walk through a battlefield to get to school, and nobody celebrates that.
Pedro, we're talking about Dorchester in a way as a proxy for the circumstances that plague urban schools right across the country, and you have worked and studied them across the country. Is anybody moving in the right direction when the administration pushes the idea of testing? It's not just the administration. It's been happening at state levels for years. And the accountability, in effect, putting the boots to the administration, you fix your own school or there's going to be less money and it'll be even harder than it is now. Is that the way to go?
I think what we're seeing in schools like Dorchester High is the complete and utter failure of educational policy in the United States, particularly in urban areas. To raise the standards alone, as we've done, by imposing these high-stakes exams, and not at all address the conditions in schools, is to blame kids and the teachers for conditions they don't control. As an analogy I would make, if we look at the Food and Drug Administration, they impose standards on the quality of food that goes out. They don't hold consumers accountable for consuming bad meat. They hold the producers accountable. If we were serious about high standards, our high standards would not just focus on kids' performance on tests. It would focus on the responsibility of school districts and state governments to create conditions in schools that ensure that all kids have access to well-trained, competent teachers, that all kids go to clean, well-built facilities.
But that's part of the politician message. They're saying if it's not happening at your school, then we're going to tighten the screws on the school until...
But right now, the only people being held accountable are the children. The only ones who will lose right now, we are at risk of seeing 12,000 children in the state of Massachusetts who will be denied high school diplomas if they do not pass the MCAS this year. Will we be better off as a state to have 12,000 more people without high school diplomas who therefore can't qualify for many jobs as a result of this policy? I think not. And that's not an argument for low standards. That's to say that we need high standards across the board, not just on the backs of kids.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Natick, Massachusetts. Samuel's on the line. Hi, Samuel.
Hi. First of all, thank you for letting me in. And I see this opportunity to challenge any of us, every person who listens to this and even those who doesn't listen, to put their, to put their money where their mouth belongs to or whatever thing it is. Because this is the only station that actually talks about things that relates to the people, relates to America, relates to our future, relates to where we're going and where we're coming from. So thank you very much. Here is my comment. Comment number one. According to an educational philosophy, the behavior of a child reflects its environment. I happen to be a black man who came here 20 years ago, struggled, worked 3 or 4 jobs and continuously, in fact, lived in some of this neighborhood, worked in some of this neighborhood. And at one time, I was in a tutor in Union Methodist Church in Columbus Avenue for free. Now, my question is, the behavior of a child reflects the environment, an environment of deprivation, degradation, and liquor mats, now I mean liquor store, doesn't help. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Hello. And again, what is the function of this environment? It's more of a function of social policy. We have no social policy. When you have, the professor is saying blame the school district. When you have a country that build the smartest missiles but misguided priorities, that's guided missiles with misguided priorities, that decides that education is a function of, funding of education is a function of local community.
Samuel, let me just step in here and ask Isor, when he talks about a child being part of its environment, you know, the kid is stuck because of the neighborhood that the child is stuck, do you see, you're a community activist, that there's enough happening in the community to change that, or that more assistance needs to come, either from the politicians, from different levels of government, from social work?
It seems to me that when kids walk into my classroom and they fall asleep, that that while we might be trying to prepare them for MCAS, that many of these kids have suffered a variety of traumas. One can be not eating correctly. One can be sharing a bed with several spouses. One can be shuffled back and forth between different guardians. And the problem is that when you put these high standard or high stake tests in front of these kids and they don't have the stability or are provided with the means to perform to their potential, that's not an issue for the school to prepare or to fix. That's an issue that we need to be concerned about in social policy. These kids need more support to be able to meet these kind of standards. It's not that they're not in school. They're in school. They're just not prepared. They're not ready to learn in all cases, and there's nothing I can do about that. So I think the caller's right in that we might need to readdress social policy that concerns the community as well. And this isn't something that a church dinner can fix. This isn't something that that we can fix by after-school clubs. This is something that we have to look deep down as a nation and say, what is our responsibility to our children, to our democracy? Because these kids aren't going away, they're growing up and they're going to be voting.
But Pedro, as daunting as the problem is of changing a neighborhood like Dorchester, is the notion of changing the way government thinks and making education part of social policy instead I don't know whether or not that's even...
Well, that's why I wish that when Secretary Page comes on in the next hour, that you'll ask him this question, because the United States is at the bottom of the ranks amongst industrialized nations in every single indicator for child welfare. That is not just in education, but in health, in every indicator. We have the highest child poverty rates amongst industrialized nations. We are a wealthy and great nation. We should be able to do a much better job. All we have to do is look north to Canada. Canada does such a better job for all kids, not just its wealthy kids. So a lot of this is about, do we have the will? Do we care enough about kids like those at Dorchester High School to ensure that they, too, have an opportunity to a better life?
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. To Carrie, North Carolina. Susan's on the line. Hi, Susan.
Hi, this is Susan Wing. And my question was, everything that we're talking about right now has, what about, it's the family life of these kids. We're asking schools to become parents for the children, and that's the thing that needs to be fixed to really fix this overall. I feel so sorry for these kids because I think a lot of people in this country do not consider these children our children. And they're over there somewhere far away from their families, and no one is doing enough to help fix the family life. The family lives were fixed, that would help their situations at schools. It would help the schools.
Let's hear from Sandy Simpson on this, Susan.
Many of my parents love their children dearly. And many of the reasons that I don't get to see them at family nights is because they're underemployed. They're working more jobs than they can imagine or that we could imagine to pay rent and utilities. And as a parent, you depend on the school to provide your kids' education, but you're the one that still needs to pay rent. You're the one that still needs to put food on the table. So I think it's our responsibility to make sure that while these working families might not be the same families that are in the rest of America, these families are working as hard as they can to provide their children with as many options as they can. I'm not sure fixing the family unit is the root of the problem.
It's one of them. I mean, isn't Susan, that's what you're saying?
I grew up in the inner city, and I saw a great deal of this all around me. It's that the parents are either, maybe they're teenagers raising children, or they are so overworked to survive, or they've got a lot of drug problems that they can't be parents. That's for, I think a lot of these things are fueling it. And what I want to ask is, like, look, I grew up in the inner city. I live out in the suburbs now. I would like to help out and go back to my roots to help these kids. I'd like to hear some solutions. What can I do as a listener out here to help these kids? What do you recommend?
Pedro.
Well, I would recommend that wherever you live, that you support politicians who are serious about a more encompassing view of education that goes beyond high standards and high-stakes tests, and that really looks at the social conditions in urban schools and urban communities, and is trying to bring things like welfare to all, healthcare to all kids. Families need help. Poor families are in distress in this country. There are lots of kids who don't grow up in families at all now, who are in group homes and in foster care. So while I agree with you that families have to play a role, I also think that there are many families that are struggling and that need a lot more help. And I think that middle-class people can do a lot to register their concern with politicians for our great nation to do much more to address the issue of poverty in America.
Isora, what can people do to make things better?
Get involved in your community and get involved with your neighbors and let them know that you're there and to help. And
even if it's not your own son and daughter, you can help, right?
Yeah, you can help.
Absolutely. And there's also mentoring. I mean, there's a role in all schools for adults that are willing to take the time to participate. There are hundreds of ways to participate in your local schools and in city schools. And what you need to do is get on the phone. I mean, it's not easy to figure out how to get involved, but there are ways. Kids need adults in their lives. And so I would strongly encourage you to pick up that phone and call the high school or the elementary school in the city that you grew up in and tell them you want to donate 4 hours a week.
Susan, thanks for your call. Pedro, thanks for coming in. As you mentioned earlier, Secretary of Education's coming in next. Quick question for him.
Does he still agree with the statement he signed when he was superintendent of Houston that called for the next Secretary of Education to do major things to improve urban areas?
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Isora Mendez, thanks so much for being with us, and Sandy, for your time as well. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our interns are Clint Kavanaugh and Meredith Levinson. Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.